If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems, too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and, of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
An Erio's original.
I keep trying to have this optimistic outlook, is that I hope, and I do, there is a part of me that believes that somehow some good will come out of this. And that's just how I'm trying to frame this in my mind.
That's all we can hope for.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho. You're listening to The Margaret Cho. Today, we have a guest that I'm so excited about. He is a podcaster. He is a really cool musician. He is my friend. We have Tony Thaxton. Do you have popsicles on your shirt?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Oh, that's very summer refreshing.
Thank you. You know, So with all of everything that's going on, you know, not leaving the house, I need to get up, take a shower, get dressed, not wear pajamas all day. It mentally, it just helps me. I know some people can do that. I can't do that. And I needed to.
No, I agree.
So I had to go that route. And then today I was like, you know what? I'm going to go an extra step and put a collared shirt on. And I feel even better.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
I know. It's a nice little, you know, it's a nice little touch. And it does feel, I mean, it is practically, it feels like July.
Yeah. It's, I know. I hope this is not going to last. It got way too hot very quickly.
It's very strange, but it's welcome, I guess. It was so rainy and crazy, but I moved my office outside because I needed some other environments. That's how I, kind of am trying to stave off my cabin fever is changing around my living arrangements.
Yep.
Because it's like such a strange thing to be in the same kind of Groundhog Day every day. You know, it's so weird.
Absolutely. Yeah. I did that the same. I've been trying to do that and I'm still considering, just like rearranging some furniture and stuff, like where I'm sitting right now used to be over to my left and now I've moved it here. And trying to just same thing, like sometimes I'll work in my living room, sometimes I work in my office. I'm finding I'm having to mix it up more than I ever had to in the past.
But what's good is you're still able to record and you're still able to do that, you know, and that's a real blessing. And people are needing to listen to podcasts more than ever, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm very lucky that I'm able to continue working through this. You know, it's really only been affected logistically for obvious reasons, mm-hmm. you know, because all the recordings are like this now. But then, like, with my show, Bizarre Albums, that I do, that's not really affected because I don't normally have guests on anyways. So it's just all mm-hmm. me researching and then telling the story and presenting this thing. So that's like, you know, that really was not affected at all, which is even better. But it's nice to still be able to have this work, but I do miss the in-person It's just not, like, while this works, it's just not quite the same. You know, it just feels a little off. It's becoming more normal, which I think is good and bad at the same time.
Well, it is, like, but I find myself, like, I've been doing the this recording, podcasting for a bit, and then also doing a lot of business meetings on Zoom and Skype and different kinds of things like that. And it's becoming more normal. And I mean, I think with show business, people are just really desperate to work. And I think, like, just in entertainment in general, there's such a need to do something because people just can't imagine staying dormant for long.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there's too much at stake. There's too many high stakes. There's too much that's needed to be done. And people, we don't have a way to just stay inactive. So we have to just keep moving.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know where you are with this, but the biggest thing for me, and again, glad to have the work, and it's good, and I've got plenty of things to keep me busy, but my focus is terrible these days, and like everything takes me at least three times as long as it should. And I don't know, that seems, that's a lot of people that I've talked to have been experiencing that same thing. Has that been an issue for you at all?
Yeah, it's really bad. I mean, I couldn't, like, I had some real problems, like, reading.
Yeah.
And I had to, like, stop reading anything that was too obtuse and difficult and dense. It's a struggle, you know, because I can't really, like people are like binging Ozark and shit. I'm like, I can't handle shit. It's really hard. Like, just to focus on a story or anything, like, to get lost in things. Like, I would like to, but I'm having trouble focusing on things and, or following things. Like, I'm just, my mind is someplace else.
Yeah. Same.
And lost.
Yeah. And I think so many people are. I don't know. I've heard people say they're not having that problem, and I don't know if I believe them.
Yeah.
I think that, it's just because we're all going through this. I know that's been a thing, too, is that some people feel bad. Like, they feel like they're not allowed to feel bad right now because they're like, I know so many people have it much worse. I'm lucky right now. This could be so much worse. But, like, this is still a pretty traumatic thing that we're all experiencing right now.
Yeah. I mean, what is it an affective? Is it an affective, like, depression? Or is it, like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like, well, I'm 51. So I think what I'm experiencing is some sort of a PTSD from watching movies in the mid to late 80s about the second Cold War, which would be the day after Testament or Threads, which was about the second nuclear holocaust. Mm-hmm. After the Russian nuclear holocaust, supposedly that they would be destroying the United States and we'd be living in underground bunkers a la Donald Fagen's The Nightfly, or whatever, you know, atomic cafe kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing of like going into that kind of like headspace of like, this is the end of the world is not a good way to go about it. Like, it, you know, that there's like the different ways of approaching it. It's like either going like full on into, we're all going to die, or nothing's going on that's bad. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Either way, it's like, I don't know if that either way is like the right way, but.
Yeah. I don't think any of us know what the right way is right now. Obviously.
There is no right way.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's just maybe carrying on whatever feels right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Which has, you know, and it's a struggle even figuring that out. And I felt like I'd been doing a lot better. I felt like I'd kind of turned this corner where I was kind of adapting and getting a little more used to this being the normal, at least for now and probably for a while. But then it'll just, like yesterday, I'd done good for like 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks or something. I'd been like actually like really feeling better, or at least adjusting. And then yesterday, nothing happened. Like nothing mm-hmm. bad came my way or anything. And just, it was just like something just hit me out of nowhere. And I just was terrible yesterday. Like had just such a worst day, terrible day. And one, I couldn't focus at all. And I had a bunch of work to do and I got some of it done. It took me forever. Then I was like, you know what? I'm going to just get out. I'm going to just go for a drive. Cause in the past, that's helped me a little bit just to just go drive around a little bit. And, I tried that yesterday and it actually, I think it sort of backfired. I was already not great. And then going around and seeing everything so empty and just seeing businesses closed, and then even too, like places that, have been around forever and that, you know, are already, they already know they're not coming back. And like, you see the like building for lease signs up or something like that. And it just,
oh yeah.
Yeah. It, my plan backfired. It made me feel worse, I think.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's like, it's very, that whole thing is very strange. I heard about the troubadour, which is very sad,
yeah.
Which may be going away. You know, those kinds of things, those sorts of venues are like really struggling, which is, mm-hmm. you know, that's an awful thing to think about. Like, you know, those music venues that we love so much, you know, that yeah. that's a really important one.
Totally.
I really love that place and all of the great power pop that I would go see there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from my earliest days of coming to LA, I would go see so many people there. I would go there like years ago with like Red Cross and, you know, my first days in LA.
Uh-huh.
But it's something that, you know, I was like, oh man, it's the one place that I thought I would never imagine that place closing.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing with so much of this is that like so many things that we've just taken for granted that just like, oh yeah, that's going to be around forever. Like I'm not even thinking twice about that, you know, because you don't even have that thought because it's just such a thing.
It's so crazy. It's so bizarre. It's like the whole thing of like, I mean, I don't know. I really hope that we can just bounce back. I mean, maybe it'll be better. Maybe everything will be better after. Maybe things will be better.
That's my hope. I keep trying to have this optimistic outlook is that I hope and I do. There is a part of me that believes that somehow some good will come out of this. That's mm-hmm. that's my biggest hope. And that's just how I'm trying to frame this in my mind.
That it'll be better than better.
Yeah.
It'll be better and better and better. I mean, that's all we can hope for.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. Because otherwise, if I'm not having that optimistic outlook, then it's just, it feels terrible. So you got to try and think positive about this. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Are we talking about this too much? I don't know how much you normally get into this or if you
No. We because it's a big deal, right. But I mean, it's certainly, I think it's like it's on everybody's mind. So it's on my mind a lot.
Yeah, of course. Right.
And I mean, it's like what is on everybody's mind? It's like you can't escape it and it's also, I think it's generational. It's also something that is like, you know, it's sort of like what affects me because like it's sort of like what do we do with our lives? Like it's a kind of like I mean, as a touring artist, mm-hmm. as you know,
yeah,
what do we do?
Yeah,
but you guys were just you were just on tour,
yeah,
and so then you finished your tour like right at the at the beginning of this.
Pretty much.
I mean, it's like so you guys, you were on tour and then you finished like in February.
Yeah, it finished mid-February was when it was all done. So like, I think mm-hmm. if I remember right, yeah, you're hearing rumblings about this from like other countries, but you know, like I feel like we always do here, like, oh, we're going to be fine. And you just,
yeah.
And you know, here we are. But yeah, I'm so, mm-hmm. I feel so fortunate that the tour was when it was, because that was our first tour in several years. We had stopped, we basically broke up in 2016 and then decided mm-hmm. to do a little run this year. And, you know, it was months and months of building this up. And Ticket sales went great, and we knew this ahead of time, and we're feeling really good about the tour. It seemed like January was kind of a weird time to tour, but because usually not a lot of tours are going on during that time because it's such a bad time to be traveling on icy roads, you know?
Yeah.
But now in retrospect, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad the tour was when it was.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah. So very, very lucky with that, because that was so much fun and it went beyond our expectations. And we were supposed to be going to the UK later this month for a couple festival shows there. Obviously, those aren't happening. But beyond that, as far as that side of life is going, like, it didn't affect it. You know, we got that out of the way mostly before.
Yeah.
So who knows? Yeah. And like same thing, like what you were talking, like the Troubadour and everything. You know, so many of the things like that that you take for granted of like these venues you like, or even just playing a show. Just do it. Like,
yeah,
I don't know when I'm going to get to play a show again. And
I know
it's really weird because I've had that maybe in the past, just with like I had left the band for a few years at one point, and I just kind of wanted to not do that for a bit. And, you know, you have these moments of like, oh, I'm not sure what the next thing is for me. But like this being just this whole thing, oh, it's not only I don't know when I'm going to play a show again, it's everybody has that same feeling. And having that go away does, I don't know how you're feeling about that, but like it's a pretty, even though that's not really my full time deal anymore, music, to just kind of have that taken away is scary, and I don't like it, because that's such a, it's been a gigantic part of my life forever.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a really huge part of my existence, and it's such a very strange, very daunting kind of prospect. I was supposed to spend almost the entirety of May on the road, and so it's very like, it's very strange. Like right now I was going to do a huge tour, and then I was going to be in Australia and Japan all of June and July. And so it's so weird. So I'm trying to figure out like what it's going to look like, you know, I was going to go to, and then in June I was going to do a big thing of like, North Carolina and do a tour of the Moog factory.
Oh, nice.
And really, uh-huh, really figure out how to use that goddamn grandmother.
Oh, right. But, I thought you were telling me about that. Yeah.
It's such a very strange instrument. At least I have some really good quality time with the Moog grandmother, which is such a weird instrument. I have had some quality time with my Mellotron and my Moog grandmother. You know, one thing that the quarantine has taught me is to really understand that the synthesizer, the Moog grandmother, is not a piano.
Right. Yeah, I know we talked about this a little before. I don't know the specifically the grandmother, but in general, they're super fun to play with. But yeah, you definitely... Because is that mono, or it's not poly, is it? Like, you can't do multiple notes at the same time, or can you?
I don't know, but it's a bunch of, what it is a bunch of, it's like a bunch of tubes, and it's like I thought it was like a piano.
Uh-huh.
I really had no idea or understanding what a Moog was, except I thought it was like a piano, and I was so wrong.
Yeah.
It's like a robot. It's right. Like a robot with a bunch of tubes and a bunch of like jacks and wires, and then you put
so
it in.
It
and
even it, has all of that. It's like old school. Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I covered a record on my show called Plantasia. Do you know about this record?
Oh, no.
It's crazy because it's nothing but synthesizer music, and like Moogs specifically. And it was this guy Mort Garson who made this whole record, and it's pretty cool, like, because again, it's nothing but synth, and it's just the funny thing about it is the record was made literally intended for plants.
Oh,
like it's supposed to be music for plants,
right?
Because time there was some new research, because it came out in 76, I think, late 70s somewhere. And there had been some research that was shown that like plants could respond well to music. So this guy made this whole synth album called Plantasia. And it's cool. Like, especially if you're interested in the Moog and everything, it's a cool record to check out.
Well, I definitely agree. I think that there was like a long time movement where you would speak to your plants or talk to your plants. I mean, that is like, that makes sense too, because it's really like an oxygen exchange. So, I mean, that's like photosynthesis, right? It's like you're talking to your plants, so you're exchanging oxygen with them anyway.
Right.
So the, vibration from music would also be sort of the same thing. So
yeah.
Plantasia is a perfect thing to do for them.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. So,
yeah.
And what is that? What is that other one? There was another Switched on Bach is another album that's a synthesized. It's all synthesized Bach.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of the first one, or that's at least the one that kind of got it a little more into the just public consciousness, kind of, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting that. Because I think that record actually surprisingly sold well, and I think that was like what kind of got a lot more people like noticing the synth as like a usable instrument.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I got the one that I got because I was listening to Trent Reznor go on and on about how much he loved it, you know, and he had one and he was really in love with it. And then I started listening to this one Nine Inch Nails song that I really like called A Perfect Drug, which I think is a really perfect song. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a really... there's something about the way that it's so atonal, and it's actually just like a perfect song. It's like I think that a lot of Nine Inch Nails is really hard for me to wrap my head around.
Yeah,
it's like I don't really I can't figure out how he makes it, but that one song is like a perfect encapsulation of what he does.
Yeah,
so I love it, and in a pop way. And so, you know, he just kept talking about how he made that song on the grandmother, and so I was like, oh. I got it, and I'm like, I can't figure it out. I can't figure out what patches and cables. So crazy. It's so crazy. But it's really cool.
Is this, I think I looked it up at one point, but I can't remember now. Is the grandmother, is that something is this old, or is this one that they are still currently making? Like, do you have a new one or an old one?
I have a new one, but it's one that they've reproduced.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, What instruments do you have there with you or at your place?
Here I do have some drums here, but I'm in an apartment. You know, my upstairs neighbors wouldn't like that very much if I had. So I have drums here, but I have them set up with like making them super dead, and I have these like special quiet cymbals and use the little hot rod sticks to play quietly. And it's not really my favorite way of playing, but it's how I can play here. And I have some electronic drums here as well, and those can work in a pinch for recordings. But I hate playing them though. They're a quick solution for something, but just playing electronic drums when you're so used to real drums, they just never feel the same. They just don't react totally the way you want them to. So those are like my emergency, I gotta record something quick drums. But then I also have just nothing crazy, because I mostly just, you know, use, when I'm recording at home, I just basically use Logic and use a lot of the sounds that they have built in. So, you know, I just have like a Telecaster, and then just a cheap Fender acoustic guitar, and then a bass. I have like a Hofner Beetle bass, which are very fun to play if you've never played one.
Wow. I used to have one of those, I think it's a 64 Hofner Paisley, it was like a six string electric. It was like a weird Paisley kind of cover, but I don't have it here. I have like a nice, I think it's like a 1958 telly, like a blue, like a baby blue telly. Uh-huh. And then I have what I've been playing a lot, which I think is really weird, is a 12-string Griffin, which is like a tiny, it's kind of like it's like a weird, it's almost like a mandolin, but it's a 12-string guitar. It's very high. Weird. It's like tuned in like G. It's okay. Tuning. It's very strange, but it's a very, it sticks like a 6-string mandolin.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't. It's nice. Maybe if I saw it, it would ring a bell. But yeah, I don't know if I know anything about that. That's crazy.
Have you heard things that like you're like, this is so good? I actually really like the Richard Simmons record.
I know those songs are surprisingly good. That's kind of been. There's been a few records that I've covered that have surprised me. I'm like, wait, why does this exist? And then I listen to it, and I'm like, you know, this isn't bad. And that Richard Simmons record is near the top of the list there. Like, there's a few that are kind of just, you know, him yelling, workout routines. But, like, some of them are legit songs that are super, like, there was a song on it called Don't Tell Me. And that song would not leave my head for weeks after I covered that album. And it was, all the songs were written by... Well, this is the thing with these weird celebrity albums is they always have really legitimate people working on them, like either writing the songs and or just like these killer session musicians on top of that. And so I know that the songs on that Richard Simmons record were written by, I might get this wrong, but I think her name was Allie Willis. I know she passed away recently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like she's a friend of mine, yeah.
Yeah.
She just passed. I saw her right before she died. I saw her in October. She died at Christmas.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But she wrote September.
Yeah.
And she wrote Neutron Dance.
And the Friends theme.
Yeah, she wrote a lot of, Earth, Wind, and Fire songs. She wrote a lot of the Pointer Sisters songs. Yeah. I mean, she wrote a majority of, like, a lot of the funk and, like, disco songs that, yeah. I mean... She was an amazing, amazing writer and just a really real kook of a real funny live wire of a lady.
I've watched real some interviews funny. With her, and yeah, totally.
Do you, she was real fun.
Did am I right? And didn't she didn't play instruments though, right?
I think she did. I mean, but she wasn't like very, I mean, that wasn't sort of her strong point. She sort of did everything, but not, that wasn't sort of like it. It was sort of. Was everything, like, you know, but that wasn't like, she wasn't a performer.
Yeah.
You know, like that wasn't her strength.
Yeah. I'm always fascinated though by that when you hear of certain artists that wrote certain songs, but they are not, no, you've like never, like Michael Jackson is an example for me of like, you know, all these songs that he wrote, but like I've never once seen any footage of him ever touching an instrument. And I'm just curious how that songwriting process works if you don't play anything.
Yeah, I think that like they would just sort of like know how to sound it out. I heard that he would be able to like play things and like kind of like do it, but then he would like give sort of like map them out on like an instrument, and then like give it to like a sessions player to really do it.
Yeah,
that would. I imagine you would have to be able to do it like to some degree.
Yeah. That's what I would assume as well. Or maybe they are they can play, they just choose not to when actually performing. I don't know. But that's just always a thing I've wondered. I feel like what you're saying is got to be at least close to what was going on, if not exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would do, like, I'm not the best player, but I will sort of, like, sketch it out for somebody, and then they'll, you know, give it to the sessions people to play it.
Yeah.
Only people that are, like, really, like, determined to make you play on your record, like John Bryan would, like, make me play on record because out of principle. Yeah, he's, like, out of principle, you have to play.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. But then if you're playing with him, you have to play it, like, 50 times.
Right.
And it's got to be perfect, which is like, of course, if you're playing with it, you know, if he's producing, you have to be perfect.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's like I would always rather give it to the Wrecking Crew.
Right. Yeah.
Give it to Carole Kay to play. Right. I don't want to play it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what's so crazy, too, is how many on all these weird records, too, is, yeah, the Wrecking Crew on so many of those albums. And then almost even more so, at least on these weird records, is the Tower Power horns. They are on everything.
Oh, everything.
Yeah.
That's what I would, if I could have a Tower Power, if I could have a rhythm section and horns and strings on everything, I would be set. Like, if I could write songs like Paul Williams and have a strings and a Tower Power horns, I would be so set.
Yeah. It's really fun. Like, I've gotten to play with some horn sections before, and there is something about it. It's just like this new element that you're not used to, and when they're right there, and like as a drummer, they're usually kind of like right next to me, and there's something about it that's it adds this new element of fun to it, and also horns surprisingly loud. I feel like drummers always get the bad rap for being so loud, but horns are loud.
Horns and strings. Strings add so much emotion that you're like, oh, you know, it's just another. It's almost like a drum riser, or it's like almost being elevated. It's like if you're like, you know, a drum rises from this, you know, right. Elevation.
Yeah,
it feels so good.
For sure.
Now, I could talk to you all day, but we have to go. But I want to let people know about where they can find you and your podcast and all the things that you do.
Sure. I'm just, first of all, at Tony Thaxton on Twitter and Instagram. My band is Motion City Soundtrack. Recently reunited, but who knows? Who knows what's going on from there? And I also play drums in Don't Stop or We'll Die. This is a comedy band with Paul Rust from Netflix's Love, if you know that show. And then my podcast is Bizarre Albums, where every week they're just like short 15, 20-minute episodes that I do a ton of research for, and just, I'm never making fun of these weird albums. I just want to like explore how and why they happen. So it's always like records by actors, athletes, fictional characters, or sometimes just like a band put out like a really strange record that was completely different than everything else they put out and confused lots of people. And I've always been fascinated by that kind of stuff. So I made a show about it. And then, that's kind of a bit. And then I'm also the on-air producer for Allison Rosen Is Your New Best Friend.
Well, thank you, Tony.
Thank you. I'm sorry for how long my plugs were.
I like it. I like it. Thank you. I hope I get to see you soon.
I hope so, too. It's taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart.
The Margaret Show is an Erios production with editing by Tracy Levy and original music by Garrison Starr. Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Erios.
Powered by Acast.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.